Okay, well, welcome everybody. Lillian, certainly appreciate your willingness to join this committee to replace Bill Trout, but we're glad that you're willing to take on that responsibility, and hopefully the meeting today is kind of get everybody back on track, and the last item on the agenda is to establish a time to set up an in-person meeting so that we can really move this subject forward. I think it's an extremely important subject, and we look forward to this preparation for that face-to-face meeting.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move to the second item on the agenda, which is to reset the subcommittee's goals. Sarah, you going to do that?
Yes. Great. Thank you, Fielding. And Lillian, I echo the chairman's words. We're so excited to have you formally as part of the subcommittee. I think you've dialed in and joined some of the subcommittee meetings in the past on teacher prep and licensure, and I know this is an area of interest and focus for you, so I think, again, you'll be a really great third member for this subcommittee. And you're coming in at a good time, I think, because as Fielding said, this subcommittee has not met since late last fall, and so we've been on a bit of a hiatus, in part because of staffing transitions, largely because the sort of initial goals that we set out for this subcommittee that I can run through kind of in a high level in just a minute had been met, with the exception of one that we'll come back to in just a second. So I think I'll give you kind of a quick recap of the work of this subcommittee in terms of our initial goals, and then I'd love feedback on additional sort of items or areas of interest that you might have in terms of additional meetings or future meetings for this subcommittee, if there's other things that you think we should be tackling. I want to make sure we get that down and we can feed that back to you for verification before we kind of create a new work plan. But essentially, just again to kind of remind all of us where we started with this subcommittee, we formed it initially because we knew a couple things were true in terms of the need to go deeper with a subcommittee on the areas of teacher preparation and licensure. In the areas of licensure, we knew that there were some of our content assessments. We were working to raise Praxis cut scores across a whole host of tests, and we wanted to make sure that as we were raising those cut scores, that we really had the right cut score or had the right content assessments on the books in terms of alignment with our academic instructional standards for students in Tennessee. And all of us know that we've been in a process of changing and raising some of those standards in various areas across the core academics, and so in particular wanted to look at a few areas that we'll come back to in a minute to ensure that we had the right assessments on the books that were most aligned to our student standards. We also, as part of that, wanted to begin to explore performance assessment requirements. So in addition to sort of the more traditional content assessment kind of bubble test that assesses baseline content knowledge, there are new performance assessments coming online in the form of EdTPA and other similar assessments that attempt to kind of marry pedagogy and content in a more in a way that better replicates the act of teaching. So EdTPA being one assessment at the time, this subcommittee was instrumental in sort of reviewing the data and the test itself, hearing from various experts and folks in the field who'd been piloting EdTPA and making that recommendation to the full board about its use for all preparation completers, which is something now that will occur starting in 2019. All graduates of teacher preparation programs in Tennessee will be required to take and pass the EdTPA. And Spencer is going to give you an update there in terms of some of the data that we're seeing already from our institutions that have begun using EdTPA. And then in the areas of preparation, there were sort of three goal areas that the subcommittee was tackling. First was looking at, again, sort of the bar for admission and making sure that our board policy was setting sort of an appropriate bar for admission but was not precluding strong candidates from entering the programs. And part of that was looking at sort of the appeal process that programs use when they admit someone who has not met sort of that bar of entry. And so that's something that we are, as a result of this subcommittee's work, working closely with the department to monitor now the appeal process that EPPs use for admission for candidates who haven't met that minimal bar for entry. Another big topic that's ongoing, but I think is an area where we're getting more updates at our next in-person meeting from the department, this has been a big lift, but looking at sort of the new CAPE standards and our new way of approving teacher prep programs using a more outcomes-based set of metrics has been a big focus in terms of the policy that was passed a couple years back and the standards that accompany that and the interim reviews, the rubrics, the metrics that we'll need to utilize as we move into that world now that we have our first set of annual reports that were developed by the department this last year using a lot of that outcome data that will be informing the board's approval decisions moving forward. So again, there's been a lot of discussion and input from the subcommittee on that area of work. And then the last area that we had discussed that, again, I think we could kind of further discuss this morning in terms of where we'd want to come back, but we had discussed the idea of having state-level recruitment goals, again, thinking about what this state, whether it's setting a goal or thinking about, and you'll hear some of the incentive grants that our team has worked with the department to sort of think about how we better incentivize the recruitment of diverse candidates in our teacher prep programs, in particular, to better reflect the student population in terms of the folks that are graduating from our teacher prep program. But again, that sort of incentive grant kind of focus on recruiting minority or pre-service minority teachers was a direct result of the subcommittee's discussion and input as well. So again, not to be long-winded, I'll stop there. Those were kind of, again, the high-level goals of the subcommittee, in particular in terms of our review of content assessments. That piece, because it was dependent on having the right capacity in our team to lead that, and you know, certainly we had to secure the partnership of our two vendors, ETS and Pearson, and have their agreement, which they were happy to give. But there was a number of things that had to happen for us to be able to convene educators to review the actual tests that are used in a couple areas that we prioritized as a subcommittee. So that's really for today. We wanted to report out to you on where we are with the content assessment review. Think about, again, additional goals beyond the ones I just mentioned that we've covered already as a subcommittee, and then give you an update on EdTPA, some of the incentive grants that the department has just issued, and then set a date for our next in-person meeting. Any questions or thoughts about sort of the recap of last year, and then thoughts about additional topics that you would want to be focused on as a subcommittee moving forward?
So where are we in a delivery date on content assessment?
So that is going to be the topic that Amy's diving into next. She's going to give you the specifics on that. We are planning to bring you a recommendation for secondary math and reading later this fall.
Okay.
But she's going to tell you a lot more about the details of sort of what we've done on that front.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions? I think the goals we set there that you've reviewed there are still very appropriate. So I think that just if we can achieve all those, I think we'll all be in good shape.
Great.
Well, yeah, and I think in many cases, you know, it's a matter of sort of monitoring now kind of the progress against some of these big areas that we had laid out as a subcommittee. So I do think you're right, feeling it's not that we need to change directions completely, and we can certainly keep all of these things sort of on the radar for the subcommittee and provide updates. Lillian, in particular, is sort of our newest member to the subcommittee. I know you've had a number of conversations with districts and others about various considerations for recruitment and placement of teacher candidates. Do you have any other thoughts or anything you want to add?
Sarah, I do not at this time, and that doesn't mean that something will not bubble up as we go through the conversation and through this particular meeting and certainly in future meetings, but certainly reserve the right to come back at another time and add to it. Just getting reacquainted and getting my feet wet, so I do want to make sure that I go back and check through conversations I've had in the past and things that have been discussed at the local level here. So I just try to reserve that for a later date.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And really the one thing I was thinking about, and again, we can come back to this at a later date after you've given it a little more thought. I continue to think that maybe our out-of-state licensure requirements, while we've made a couple specific changes recently to address some of the military spouse issues that Clarksville-Montgomery in particular had flagged, I think that may be an area that this subcommittee might want to review again. I think it's always about trying to find the right balance of, you know, having a high bar but also not an inappropriately high bar, especially when you're talking about teachers who are licensed out of state and trying to come to Tennessee, given that we border eight different states. I continue to hear from a variety of districts and school leaders that they still struggle with our out-of-state requirements in some cases. So that may be something, not necessarily that we're...
Sarah, and we've had this discussion, you and I, multiple times with certain school districts, and I wanted to go through this meeting today, and then as we have our next couple of meetings, I do want to certainly bring that back up in conversation. It may be appropriate today. It may be best at our next in-person meeting, but I think we've all heard from the field about the challenges in hiring teachers, and certainly there are some that are struggling more than others. So it's certainly a conversation I think we'll need to take time and dig into. I didn't think we'd have enough time to cover that today, but you're absolutely right on. We do need to come back to that.
No, that sounds right. I'm really thinking ahead because I want to make sure our team is planning for the next meetings appropriately. So you all can tell us offline, too, if you have other thoughts after today about topics like that that you might want the subcommittee to explore further. But Lillian, you and I can continue to talk about that and kind of decide maybe, too, if that's something that would be appropriate to bring back at a future meeting.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, if y'all are ready, this is Amy. I will go ahead and launch into a description of our licensure content assessment review process for elementary reading and secondary math. And feel free to stop me throughout if you have any questions. Today we're going to be looking, kind of reviewing the purpose of why did we want to re-examine our licensure content assessments, how did we do it, and what are we going to do next so that we can bring you finalized recommendations later this fall. Our purpose, as you all know, is that as a state, we require educators to take and pass both content examinations and pedagogy-specific exams. Currently, the PLT, the pedagogy-focused one, is transitioning to EdTPA. Currently, we use the Praxis series from ETS for content area knowledge. So that is your high school math, your middle school history, the different content areas, elementary education, and so on. Through this subcommittee, and other board members have expressed interest in determining if the assessments that we currently used are aligned with our state academic expectations in terms of teaching in the content areas. This is particularly timely given that this board has adopted revised academic standards in the four core academic areas. We focused at this time on elementary reading and secondary math, both because student achievement has lagged in those areas in the state and because districts report shortages, especially in the secondary math, of finding enough qualified teachers. So as we went through this process, we recognized that it was a pilot. This is the first time we've ever reviewed licensure assessments. It went well, but of course, you know, if we repeat this, we'll have things that we've learned and ways that we want to refine it. And something else for y'all to be thinking about as we go through is, having looked at these two areas, what topics or what content areas would you prioritize for us next? So we'll come back to that in a moment, and you'll have some time to provide input. The way the review worked is that our staff, particularly Spencer and one of our summer research associates, developed a research brief for committees of educator reviewers with information on licensure assessments generally. How are they used in other states? What are they really used for? What does the academic research say around their effectiveness? And there was also a table that provided information on other states in our area and what they use for licensure assessments for reading and math. And that report is going to be one of the things that I send you after this meeting, so you'll be able to review it at your leisure as well. We then convened committees of educator reviewers, which included district representatives and EPP representatives, to review assessments in those two content areas, from ETS, which produces the Praxis series, and from Pearson, who are the two kind of most prominent national assessment vendors in these areas. And the reviewer's goal was to identify the exams that best aligned with what we expect here in Tennessee. we gave them pretty much carte blanche. We said you can, you know, review these assessments and say that what we're using right now is actually the best assessment to use. That's totally fine. You can say that one of the other assessments is stronger and you recommend transitioning. Or you can say that none of them really met our needs and recommend that the state pursue some sort of customized assessment. Both vendors do offer the option to customize assessments. So we really gave them sort of the wide world of options here. We held the review late in August, and we really appreciated that ETS and Pearson both had representatives attend to answer questions, and they gave us a suite of documents, including live operational test forms, test frameworks, and other sort of publicly available study guides and reference materials for each assessment. The way that it was structured, the reviewers had time to work individually to review assessments on a rubric that we created. The rubric that we created had as the bar the Tennessee State Standards for Students. That was sort of the thing that any assessment had to have to move further in the review process. We also asked on the rubric how well the assessment aligned to things like the National Council of Teachers of Math Standards for Mathematics, how well they align to the Educator Prep Literacy Standards that the board has recently approved. So those were other areas that the reviewers looked at, but the first thing, the first threshold that an assessment had to meet was alignment with the state academic standards. The reviewers worked in small teams, and they conducted a deep dive analysis of two assessments each, but they also had time to look at the other assessments in their content area. And the way we set it up was that they were comparing apples to apples. So, for example, a math reviewer might have looked at the middle school math assessment from ETS and the middle school math assessment from Pearson, so they could make a reasonable comparison. After all the assessments were reviewed, the reviewers worked with their entire content area teams to work through a set of policy recommendation guiding questions and then to provide board staff with a set of recommendations. This is just a list of our reviewers. Most of these folks have been involved with the state in other ways. They were either on the actual standards review committees to develop the ELA and math standards. They might have been summer facilitators to help implement the standards, or they worked with the content and assessment design team at the department on reviews related to the assessment, so things like item review or item analysis. So it's a very well-qualified group, and they took this process very seriously. They did a very hard 2 days of work, and we certainly appreciate them. And they're continuing to engage with us as well. I'm imagining some of them are listening in right now if their schedules are permitting. And these are just a couple quick photos of our reviewers at work. Sometimes it helps to see the setup and to see the folks who are actually engaged in this, but you can see they had quite a suite of materials from both assessment vendors that they were able to compare and contrast. Based on their recommendations, State Board staff is developing a memo for each content area summarizing our initial recommendations, and we're going to share those with stakeholders like the groups outlined below, the Tennessee Early Literacy Council, the State Associations of Math and Reading Teachers, the State Association of Colleges of Teacher Ed, and some additional district and EPP stakeholders whom we know across the state. And we'd like to do that both to get their feedback on what the recommendations were and on their recommendations for timelines moving forward. For example, if we were to change an assessment in a particular area, what timeline would work for them? What would they recommend based on past experience? That sort of thing. So Spencer and I are developing the memos, and he's developing a way for us to collect feedback through some sort of survey or form from these different groups, and we hope to be able to share those around mid-October with the stakeholder groups listed here. And then based on their feedback, we will develop finalized recommendations to share with you at our in-person subcommittee meeting. That's sort of wrapping it up for the assessment review. What questions do you have about this process or about our next steps?
So, currently, we give a math exam, content exam, that covers math from 8th grade through all high school. Is that correct?
The licensure setup, you could be licensed in middle school math, which is grade 6-8. There's another assessment you can take to be certified for algebra. So if you're a middle school teacher, but you teach 8th grade math and algebra 1 within the middle school, and then there's a high school math exam that's grades 9-12.
Yeah. So as we're looking at the future test, are we also looking at a test that would encompass not through 12th grade?
We are looking at, am I understanding your question correctly that you're asking if we're also looking into different ways of structuring the math licensure process? Based on what assessment we might go with. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Let me tell you. I'm getting bad at communication. So forgive me for this big analogy. Rather than giving a high school science exam, we have a biology-specific exam, a chemistry-specific exam, a physics exam, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Would we do a Tennessee Standards calculus exam, a Tennessee Standards algebra?
I gotcha.
One or two? Or would we just say, how much math do you know?
It's a good question. It's something that's honestly one of the recommendations from the math reviewers is that we convene a different group to look at the licensing structure that we use in Tennessee. We've been in contact with the department's licensure and prep team. They have some standing working groups that they can pose that question to. So some of the questions that were raised were things like, you know, if we had an assessment that took us through Algebra 2 or Geometry, could we get more math teachers licensed to have that initial high school level of math, and then maybe calculus is an add-on endorsement? All of those things are sort of up for discussion right now. I think one of the initial concerns that was raised was, well, then would we ever get anybody licensed in calculus? But these are, as I said, things that are still sort of ongoing discussions, so we are open to more feedback there.
So one of the things that we need to make sure when we have our spheres of representation on these advisory groups,
mm-hmm,
is that we have representation of those who are asking what's in the best interest of the students.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm asking, are we going to get calculus teachers, without asking who have demonstrated a competency in high school Tennessee calculus standards,
mm-hmm,
without that comma in the rest of the sentence, I may be getting a whole different answer.
I got you.
Just sort of, yeah. So the key is, I want enough calculus teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be in a school district's position where I can't get calculus teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to know before we license them that they know calculus.
Yes, sir.
Or at least high school standards. They don't have to be a calculus major in Colorado,
mm-hmm,
math. They just have to demonstrate they have a competency in that.
And Mike, you're exactly right. That's the reason we really set up the rubric to start with standards being the first and primary focus. It was actually really interesting. I was chatting with some of the assessment partners who have been part of similar reviews in other states, and they mentioned that in other states, the reviews were not necessarily focused on the state standards. It was more on topics like maybe how many testing centers are available, or what are the study materials like, or what are the score reports like. And I think those are interesting factors to consider, but I'm glad that in Tennessee we're starting with our student academic expectations as the focus, and then we can consider those other things and make sure that it will end up working for all the adults in the equation, but you're absolutely right that the students are our main focus.
I think it's, some really good work that's going on here, and I'm certainly going to look forward to those recommendations. I guess the question that is in the back of my mind, you probably, I don't know if you can answer at this point, but are we going to is the answer going to be when we get to November, December, that there's nothing out there that gets done what we've laid out as our objectives, or does it appear that there are some vehicles out there that do accomplish what we're talking about here?
I think that the answer is a little different for the content areas, but that in both cases we see a way forward that will not be unnecessarily protracted. That, Sarah, you want to...
Well, I was going to say, I mean, that, yeah, fielding, exactly. We started with existing assessments for the review because we wanted to first go through the path of least resistance. If there are tests out there that exist that are well-aligned to our state standards, then we definitely want to use those. And I think in most all cases, the reviewers across reading and secondary math felt like there were assessments out there that were pretty well-aligned. In one case in particular, and that's part of why we need to do some additional vetting with other expert groups, there was a recommendation that potentially we explore a customized assessment. And that in particular caused us to pause and say, okay, we need to make sure we're sort of pressure testing all of our thoughts here before we take that sort of more arduous, costly, timely path. But I think that was just in one of the, how many tests were we reviewing, Amy?
So we were reviewing tests for elementary reading, which is currently one test in Tennessee. We looked at four different options for what that could end up being, two each from ETS and Pearson. We currently have three different math assessments in the state, the middle school, Algebra 1, and high school, and we looked at one for each of those areas from each vendor for a total of six tests.
And I think even in the one area where our educators were potentially suggesting we consider customizing, there was a test that's in development that could meet. So I think the answer is hopefully we don't have to do too much customization, if any, but there's one area where we might need to consider it potentially.
So okay. To go back to where we would have, I think what Amy just said, eighth grade, algebra, and then high school.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what we got now. If we have, I really do not want to go back to where we have a whole bundle of math assessments,
mm-hmm.
and then a cut score, and I'm having to wonder, as a layperson, exactly how much of a specific subject does this candidate really know, because they're more likely going to get put in a class at some point in time out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way we can be a gatekeeper is to know that they know calculus, or they know algebra 2 or whatever. And so that conversation is going to have to happen
mm-hmm.
at some point in one of our meetings. And the second thing is, when we're looking at content and the content is aligned with our standards
mm-hmm.
and we're comfortable with that, you're going to have to be prepared to get down on the med and the primer level to explain to me how a cut score does not impact the content, the breadth of competency and the content knowledge. In other words, this assessment covers the content knowledge. We're comfortable if you know that this is da-da-da-da. And then we're going to set the content knowledge assessment at 55% cut score.
I got you. So you're saying that you'd be concerned if, let's say, somebody could take one of these tests, just for example, math, not know any calculus, but make a cut score that still allows them to pass and earn the license. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I got you.
Perfect. I wish I could have been so succinct.
That will certainly be something that we make sure we explain fully in person. And I think it'll help when you see how the reviewers approach the rubrics, because what they were able to identify in several places is, again, just going with the math explanation. Let's say that it's a high school math test, but it looked like 20% of the questions were about middle school math that we would sort of assume they know, or vice versa. Maybe the middle school assessment had extensive calculus that those folks might not actually need. So they were getting down to, I think, close to the level that you're curious about of what is on the test and does it accurately reflect what they need to be able to teach.
Okay.
And Amy, this is Lillian, and I may have missed something in the conversation today, or because I was not officially on this committee in the past. Where does the alignment come in with the content knowledge and the pedagogy? Because I know we've talked about EdTPA, but how do we square those two things together? Because it's one thing to have that cut score that says you have that content knowledge, but can you teach what you know?
Yes.
And so how do we have that alignment? And I may have missed it.
No, not at all. That's a great question.
It's a great question, though.
It is. And it's why we have this sort of both and structure in Tennessee, where you have to have both the content specific assessment and the pedagogy assessment as we're transitioning into EdTPA. Sarah, you probably have more context on that transition than I do.
Yeah, well, I was sort of making a side comment saying that's a perfect transition here in just a second, Lillian, because I think the conversation on EdTPA is exciting because it does attempt to marry the content and the pedagogy. So it will both replace our current pedagogy tests, which are, you know, computerized test attempting to assess whether a teacher can, to your point, teach the content, which is very hard to assess in an authentic way, you know, based on a computerized test. EdTPA, and Spencer's going to talk about this in just a minute, is a much more sort of authentic measure of a teacher's effectiveness in terms of the ability to plan lessons, analyze student work, be a reflective practitioner, apply the content in terms of actual teaching. So there's a lot of video recording. It's a lot like the National Board Certification process in terms of the extensive sort of data collection and kind of scoring of a portfolio of work. So I think what will be interesting is as we move into a world where all of our candidates are required to take the EdTPA, it is also through a content lens. It's not as explicit a content assessment as these kind of current Praxis and other Pearson assessments on content are, but you know, I think it will give us a better sense. It's anyway, I don't want to give away Spencer's presentation, but there's more to talk about there that I think gets at exactly your question about how we try to marry the content and the pedagogy in a way that is most predictive of a candidate's future effectiveness in the classroom. Because we know it's both. It's not just content, it's not just pedagogy. It's got to be people who can really you know, work the magic between the two.
It's 100% both.
Okay.
And as we
move
into Spencer's presentation, just keep in the back of your minds for when we do get together, you know, what content areas would you want to see this happen in next? I will forewarn you that this work was grant funded, so we will need to make sure that we find ways to fund it moving forward, either through the state or through future grants, but be keeping in the back of your mind where you'd want to see us go next. For looking at licensure assessments. And with that, I will hand it over to Spencer. He has just a short, about a page and a half handout that you can either access on the state website now or that will be in my follow-up email to you after this meeting. So we will just listen along as he leads us through the report card and EdTPA.
Great. So not to take us away from our interesting conversation about EdTPA there, but my first section is on the teacher preparation report card. So as you all know, we released the updated redesigned version last December, and we were really happy with how that turned out. I think we really kind of laid the groundwork for where we'll be with that project moving forward. We really made a website that people find easy to use, that they find valuable, and that displays the information that we wanted to present in a meaningful way. But as I've mentioned in the past, we want this to be a process of continuous improvement. So we're not content just to have that new report card. We want to make sure that it keeps getting better and more useful and more accessible. So to that end, today I'm going to talk to you guys about some of the work that we've been doing to get stakeholder feedback on the changes that we did make last year and additional changes that people would like to see to the report card moving forward. So last spring, we started to collect feedback using a similar process to what we did last year leading up to the redesigned report card's launch. And so that involved a survey that we sent out, and this went to stakeholders that we had at the EPP level, so at our educator preparation providers, at school districts, and then we also send it to current teacher preparation candidates to get more of a student perspective on things. So for that survey, we had 169 total responses, 40 at the EPP level, 52 at the district level, and 77 at the candidate level. We definitely had a positive overall response. So at the EPP level, 81.8% of our respondents said that their new report card and the website were user-friendly. 72.7% said that the information presented there was useful. And our school districts actually had an even more positive response, with 95.7% saying that it was user-friendly and 91.3% saying that they found it useful. We did see that there is a small improvement in the number or percentage of candidates who had heard about the report card and had some experience with it, but still only 18% were aware of the report card as something that they could have been using. So that's definitely an area for improvement for us moving forward. So that was kind of our first effort to collect some feedback about the new report card, but we also went to the Tennessee Association of Colleges of Teacher Education conference last spring and held a series of focus groups there where we talked through some of people's concerns about the report card as well as some things that they were happy about. And unfortunately, we had to schedule this before the annual reports were released, so our EPPs didn't have the program level data that a lot of them have been using since then to try to think about where they could be making programming changes, what they need to be focusing on more specifically. But we did still hear that people generally found that the new report card was a lot easier to use and presented the information in a way that was a lot easier to understand and for them to share with other people. But we definitely did hear some concerns about specific metrics where people felt like we needed to make some changes or they would like to see some additional information included to provide a fuller depiction of their efforts as teacher preparation programs. So hopefully by the time we have our next in-person meeting, I'll have some more specifics on what exactly we'll be changing there. But right now we're mostly kind of in the process stage, so I just want to make sure that you guys are all aware of what we've been doing and where we plan to go moving forward. So we actually did have another meeting with the TACTE, the Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. Was that just last week?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. But we did kind of give them a similar update to what I'm sharing today about where we are in the process and what we hope to be doing. So we are still engaging with those folks, even though we haven't made the changes that they've kind of suggested yet. But in addition to those EPP stakeholders, we also spoke at the Tennessee Association of School Personnel Administrators Conference last March. And so that was kind of our opportunity to connect with district level people who might be more involved with recruitment and hiring decisions, so that way they're aware of the report card as a tool that they have at their disposal. And then the other most significant effort that we're undertaking to collect stakeholder feedback this year is that we've reassembled an advisory council similar to the one that we put together last year. So this group has representatives from our EPPs, from school districts, from TOS, the Organization of School Superintendents, and then several advocacy organizations, so SCORE, who work with us on a lot of things, as well as the Memphis Education Fund. And we had our first meeting with them back in August, and we'll continue to meet with them throughout the fall. We have another meeting coming up in early October where we hope to dive into some of the data for this year and get their feedback on some of the specific metric changes that we're thinking about talking about. And again, I think when we have our next in-person meeting, we should be able to share some more concrete input that we've gotten from them. But moving forward, we'll be working with them. We also plan to have a couple of webinars where we make sure that the people who couldn't attend, say, this most recent TACTE conference are aware of everything that we've been doing and the changes that we're considering. But we do hope to continue to engage with our stakeholders as we move closer to the launch. And then one other thing I want to mention that we've been working on related to the report card is that we've been having some individual meetings with some of our institutions that have wanted to talk more closely about the report cards and the department's annual reports. So far we've already met with UT Martin, Austin Peay, and UT Chattanooga, and really gone into depth about the data on their report cards, some areas of strength and areas for improvement. And we've been really impressed. A lot of them have come with their own ideas for what they could be doing to improve some of those areas. we really are enjoying those conversations, and we have another one coming up with Tennessee Tech that we're trying to get on the books, but that should be happening sometime in October. And we hope to add a couple more institutions as well as they express interest in that. And then the last update I have for the report card is just a reminder that we were able to, through legislation that was passed in the General Assembly last year, move the date for the launch to February 15th for this year. So last year it was December 15th, but this year we have a couple of extra months to make sure that we get all the data in time, can make all of our changes, and really are just able to be more in control of the process for the launch there. So I think with all the feedback we're getting, we're going to be able to make some great changes there, and we're really excited for February. So are there any questions about where we're at with the report card or anything specific that you'd like to hear about?
Spencer, what is our market awareness of incoming college freshmen?
What is it? What is our market awareness?
So I don't know that we have an exact metric for that. The closest we've been able to get is people who are currently enrolled in these teacher prep programs, so we don't know what level they're at necessarily, but we had, I think, 18% of people at that level saying that they were aware of the report card, so we definitely do need to engage with kind of students more, but we are also hearing from our EPPs who we've reached out to about this, that a lot of students making their college decisions are making those decisions based on kind of more practical concerns rather than necessarily the strength of the teacher preparation program at an institution, so like finances or just accessibility or those types of things. But we are thinking about ways that we can engage more with like high school guidance counselors and people at that level to try to make sure that they at least have the report card and know that it's something that they can share with students who are thinking about becoming teachers.
Is there like a portal to this that high school students looking for a college could go into, that we could enter, that we could count kids? Here's the deal. Once they're at a university, it's sort of like they may learn about their program, but they've already enrolled in that university, and the likelihood of them transferring to another university is not that great, I wouldn't think. But at the same time, they made the choice. They could have made another choice if they walked in. And a university, knowing that, would be concerned about recruiting those future teachers.
Mm-hmm.
We need to know how many high school kids are availing themselves to this information.
Mike, that's a good point. I think one of the things we're asking our advisory council in probably their November meeting is how we can improve our communications and stakeholder awareness. So I'm really interested to hear from the district folks there about what resources their school counselors use when supporting students in the application process. For example, I know there's websites like collegefortn.org or other things that are used pretty prominently throughout the state. So perhaps talking with our advisory council and also THEC on ways that we could better publicize this, as you said, before students have already made their selection on other criteria.
Yeah, I mean, this is Sarah. I think, you know, Spencer was hitting it on the head too with the HR directors at the district. That's why he's presented to TASPA, which is our sort of association of HR directors. I think it's the harder nut to crack in terms of getting it into their hands for sure, but I agree, you know, our EPPs are not necessarily incentivized to share it in all cases, and I think it's going to be more helpful to students on the front end when they're thinking about what college they're going to attend if they're interested in teaching. So I think we've got to drill better into the district sort of sphere, like Amy's saying. So, like you said, this will be a big topic of conversation for our next advisory council on the report card. But if you have additional, like, concrete ways that you're thinking, I mean, I think this is one where all the brainstorming we can do would be most helpful.
And then
just as a, not a talk about thing right now, but one way would be to require EPPs to list on their website at the College of Education that report. All 43 of these, they have to have it. So when a kid goes to the website to look at that major, it's there. That's only one way to look at it, but they're going to be going to that website to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree. Right. I think we might have to have a heavier hand to require it. But it's a good suggestion.
And Sarah, one other thing, I did notice that there is, Tennessee Tech is scheduled to meet with you all. They've invited me to join the conversation on November the 16th.
Great.
From 11 to 1. I think, Spencer, you said it's in the works, but it's not scheduled yet. It is actually scheduled.
Well, and he was asking me before the meeting. I was a little confused because we've gone back and forth with them on multiple dates, and I thought I was about 90% sure we'd nail down the final date, but thank you for confirming.
Yeah, November
it should be on our calendars then.
11 to 1, and I plan to attend.
Great.
At the invitation of Tennessee Tech. So I'll be there.
That is great. And I should also say I've had a good conversation with the new dean at ETSU, and I think that's another one that'll be in the works. So I expect that hopefully we'll be able to have more of these kind of meetings. And you all heard from Chancellor Carver at the last meeting that we had in July with TEHEC, and I do think, I hope that these meetings have been helpful to the presidents, chancellors, and deans in terms of just being able to walk through the data in the report card and how it can be useful for various purposes. And then we've also been working with the department at those meetings to share the annual report data that kind of complements the report card but is much more granular and specific. So those have been positive, I think, and it's nice to be able to have those meetings now that we've got data that's actually in a usable form.
Well, I think so, because I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that they want those the report card to be accurate. They want it to reflect the results. Because I think there's some questions about that. I know I've had conversations with Tennessee Tech, and I know that will come up in that conversation. And I think, Sarah, you and I had a conversation with President Oldham about that. So we just need to make sure that the data is truly reflecting the true results. So that's another piece of the equation that we don't understand necessarily, because we're not in that world and we're not looking at the numbers from the same way they are, but we want it to reflect accurately.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think any of them would have any problem with posting their data, and I know they want to move the needle in the right direction, so I think they welcome these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And we all want to see them move the needle in the right direction.
That's right. Just
okay, good discussion. Are we ready to move on to NTPA?
I think we are.
All right.
Okay.
So we've touched on ETPA a little bit already in this conversation, but just a quick review of what it actually is. So ETPA is basically going to be replacing the current assessments that we use to assess pedagogy, which is the Praxis PLT, or Principles of Learning and Teaching series. So rather than a multiple choice online test like the Praxis test is, ETPA requires candidates to submit a portfolio of evidence, so it includes things like lesson plans and videos that the teachers take of themselves teaching from their student teaching experience. So we really do feel strongly that this is an improvement over what we're currently using, because it allows potential teachers to really be tested on the types of skills that they're going to need to be successful in the classroom. And also something that we sort of touched on a little bit earlier, but the other strength of EdTPA is that it's within a specific content area. So rather than just a general test of whether or not you have the teaching skills needed to enter the classroom, it asks whether you can teach, like, for example, secondary math, the subject that you'll need to be endorsed in. So we do hope that the EdTPA assessment can kind of move us more towards a place where we're getting to see, are teachers prepared to teach in the subjects that they're being licensed in? So this is going to become a requirement for all new Tennessee educators starting in January 2019. So currently we have a couple of EPPs who have already implemented ETPA, but in the next couple of years we'll have everybody move towards implementation statewide. So on our end, what we've really been trying to do is kind of work with the places that have had ETPA in place for a couple of years. So we've had a couple of initial conversations with 8 institutions. So those are the 6 Tennessee Board of Regents schools, so that's Austin Peay, East Tennessee State, Memphis, Middle Tennessee State, Tennessee State, and Tennessee Tech. as well as Vanderbilt and UT Knoxville, as all of these places have had EdTPA in place for a couple of years. So we wanted to talk to them about what the process of implementing EdTPA was like for them, what changes they had to make to their program structures, or outside of that, what supports they needed to provide for their students. We also asked them about kind of their reflections on the assessment as well as their students' reflections, and then how well EdTPA relates to what they're seeing as their students go on to teach in the classroom. So for the most part, we heard pretty positive things from our EPPs. They definitely mentioned having a learning curve, so the first year or two of implementation was definitely a struggle, and in particular, they mentioned having to adapt to some of the technical language that's required for students as they complete the EdTPA. But they felt that it was really well aligned with the team rubric that we use to assess teachers as part of the observation component of their evaluation when they're in the classroom. And they also felt like the things that they needed to teach their students in order for them to succeed on EdTPA were aligned with what they were already doing for the most part in their program structures and curriculum. So they didn't really have to change too many things wholesale, although they definitely did have to make some adjustments. And we did hear from a lot of places that kind of introducing their students to EdTPA earlier on in the process was something that helped them succeed after their initial implementation. So just making sure that students were aware that this was something that they were going to have to complete once they were student teaching, getting them used to, as I mentioned, some of the language that was required for that and some of the writing styles that they would need for the assessment. And then just making sure that they had kind of the external supports and the within-class supports that they needed to complete the project. Because they did say that for a lot of students, it was a very difficult task for them. It was something that they felt was a large challenge. But they also said that the students that they've talked to, either formally or just more anecdotally, once they've entered the classroom, have felt a lot more positively about EdTPA kind of on the other side. And they've really felt like, after the fact, that the experience was really worthwhile for them. So we've been encouraged by that, and we're currently working to compile. The department has been putting out in their EPP update a list of tips
implementation suggestions.
Yeah, so just ideas that other EPPs can use as they try to implement EdTPA, and then we're also going to compile some of the things that we've heard for a sort of rudimentary best practices for implementing EdTPA. And then in addition to those conversations, we've also been doing a little bit of data analysis with some of the information that our EPPs have submitted as part of the teacher preparation report card data collection process. So we're working to try to incorporate the official Pearson scores for EdTPA, but right now we're working with the self-reported data that our EPPs have given us, and we're just kind of looking at both statewide and at the institution level how well our EPPs and their students are succeeding on the EdTPA, whether it's looking like an equitable assessment for our teachers, and we also hope to really, once we have an additional year of data this year, be able to see a lot more about the relationship between EdTPA and effectiveness in the classroom. So looking at the relationship between students' EdTPA scores and their TVAS results and observation scores and things like that. So we're really hopeful that as we move towards the state implementation deadline, we'll be able to have a lot to share with the rest of the EPPs who still need to implement this. But we also are really hopeful that once it is implemented, that this can kind of serve to strengthen some of what we're looking for as we try to make sure that our teachers that we're sending into classrooms are really qualified to be there and are capable of not just knowing the content, but making sure that they can deliver it to their students in a way that helps them learn.
What questions do y'all have about EdTPA?
Just to clarify, because I know we had several meetings and discussions on EdTPA. I know we had a couple of educators from Ed Prep programs. Julie Baker from Tennessee Tech was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Julie talked about the process of how long it took to get them to the point where they're finally reaching the scores that we announced as the cut scores for EdTPA. But when did we actually say, help me remember, the date that the other education preparation programs would be required to begin?
Yeah, so January of 2019, anyone who is going to be completing their preparation program after that date will need to complete a TPA, so not next academic year.
And I think the cut scores, it was a pretty aggressive timeline to reach the cut score that we determined was the right cut score. And I know that Julie Baker had indicated it took them a while. They're pretty much there. But it's also, I think, an indication that there's going to it's going to take longer for the others to get to that level. So I think what the reason I'm saying this is I think we need to be careful in looking at that data as it comes out in the future and realizing what we've learned from others who've gone before, that it does take time. And so you cannot draw conclusions so rapidly after a short period of time or 1 year's period of time to determine is this working, is it successful, is it not, because it might take a while for it really to reflect the true benefit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does, and that's definitely, I think, a reasonable concern. I think we will have to see if we want to make any adjustments to what we were able to pass, but as you mentioned, I think most of the places who we've been looking at have at this point reached the level where the level of students you want to be passing the assessment are getting that score of 42, which is the cut score that we've set. But I actually just recently have started looking at kind of the year-by-year breakdown to see where in the process the institutions were as they went along in terms of making sure that a sufficient number of students were passing the assessment. I don't know exactly what we'll be able to do about that, but I think that's definitely something that we're going to be looking at more closely moving forward. And again, for our next in-person meeting, I think I should have some more concrete information there. But I absolutely think that's a reasonable concern and something that we should be mindful of moving forward.
Right, thank you.
Okay.
And I do want to be sensitive to y'all's time. Mr. Chairman, is it all right if I move kind of quickly through the slides that the department shared with us on grants?
Yes.
All right. Thank y'all so much for your engaged conversation on all of these important topics. This is an update that Amy Wooten from the department shared with us. She has actually a meeting that she needs to be at today that was already scheduled. So I'm just quickly going to walk y'all through some recent grants they awarded that I think you'll find interesting. And I think some of them are in areas that you represent or that obviously other board members represent as well. They have several applications open, one that has already, the application period closed. They selected the grants. I actually got to help with the review, which was really fun to see different proposals. It was called the TIP Grant, Tennessee Innovation in Preparation, and it had three different focus areas, developing a diverse educator workforce, producing educators for high-demand licensure areas, and improving ed prep regarding literacy. And ed prep providers could apply for a grant in any one of those areas, or they could actually send in more than one grant submission if they wanted to work in more than one area. $200,000 were awarded across four EPPs, distributed with about $50,000 per grant. And so I'll quickly walk you through what those were. One is with Austin Peay State University and two school systems, Clarksville, Montgomery, and Dickson County. They are trying to provide a program whereby undergraduate science majors can pursue a teaching license through a one-year master's in teaching program immediately after completing their undergraduate experience. And that's a way to draw in some undergraduate science majors who maybe didn't consider teaching early enough in their undergrad experiences to pursue licensure at that time, but that who are interested and who will be able to have some field experiences to consider actually going into teaching. Another one is with Lipscomb and Metro Nashville Schools, and this was on that focus area regarding literacy and specifically writing skill and efficacy. One, and again, with Metro Nashville and Tennessee State University regarding recent TSU completers who are employed by Metro Nashville as well as some pre-service teachers. And it's very focused on ESL theory, so working with English learners and working with diverse populations. And the need for teachers for English learners is a high-demand area in the state. And finally, UT Martin is working with Jackson-Madison County on a really intriguing program that's designed to encourage African-American male high school students to become teachers. And so this is going to help implement a new sort of portion of an existing program that they have. So as you can see, these are spread throughout the state, and there are some really interesting ideas that I'm excited to see how these go and what more we can learn from those folks. And then as we close out, I know you guys are very forbearing with me. I sent out a doodle poll and an email. It's looking like November might be a tough time to schedule an in-person subcommittee meeting. So Sarah, would you like to walk us through this part of finding a reasonable time on everybody's calendars?
Sure. This is the most challenging probably part of our meeting. I guess I don't want to schedule necessarily over the call on the phone today, but do you all have just a general sense of timing your personal sort of and professional kind of schedules in mind with the holidays? We were struggling to find a date in November that worked for all three of you and for our partners at the department. But if we have to go into December, do you have any sort of general thoughts in terms of if we send another doodle poll, what might work for you?
Go ahead.
I'm just looking at my calendar here. I'm going to be tied up that last week in November and the first week of December. I'm relatively free after that. That's obviously getting pretty close to the holidays, but I could do just about anything basically the week of December the 11th or the 18th.
Okay.
How do you look on December the 7th or 8th, Bill?
December 7th and 8th is not good for me.
Okay.
If that's what it takes, I could probably move some things around, but 7th, 8th, the 11th or 12th would be much better if we have to move to December.
Well, the 11th and the 12th work for me. Is that a problem for you, Mike?
No, they both work.
Awesome. We should have done this a long time ago.
Thinking. Just get all three of them on the phone. Okay. This will solve it. We will send a very an invitation in short order.
And we'll shoot for a morning.
Let me ask you this before we hang up, because November the 20th was the date that I said I could make that work. Did that not work for you, Mike, and you, Fielding? I think it did for you, Fielding, the 20th, but I didn't know about Mike.
November the 20th?
Fielding, yeah. I thought you could do the 21st, but not the 20th.
I could, let's see.
I may have been stretching.
No, I could do either one. I was just staying away a little bit from the 20th because if we're gonna do it in the morning in Nashville, I would probably need to drive down on Sunday, which I can do. I could do the 20th or the. And I don't know, it's the 21st that I've got a problem with. I'm sorry. I could do the 20th, but I cannot do the 21st.
Okay. That's right. And we were trying to do a morning because I think, again, for you, Fielding, in particular, with the longest drive. So, again, tossing it back to the three of you, would you prefer to do the Monday, the 20th in November in the morning, recognizing, Fielding, that for you, that'd mean driving over Sunday night probably, or December 11th or 12th also in the morning, so probably the 12th, again, to avoid that Monday. Mm-hmm. But we're indifferent. We can do either of those dates on our end.
Well, I can do the 20th, I can do the 11th or the 12th, but Mike, what's going to work best for you?
The 20th works fine. Need to talk to Nathan to see if I've got a day in the district on the 12th.
Okay.
Okay.
November 20th is just fine for us then.
Fielding, are you sure that you're okay with that?
Yeah, November 20th is fine, yeah.
Okay.
The morning of November 20th works fine for me.
Okay, great. Well, again, thank you for the the help on scheduling. Like I said, we were struggling a little bit there and wanting to make sure it was something that worked, because we don't want to have you all in person, or we definitely want to have all of you in person if we're going to have the in-person meeting, and so that was getting to be a bit of a challenge. Thank you all again for making time this morning, and glad we were able to recoup this hour for this purpose when our special called meeting was canceled. Any last thoughts or comments before we hang up?
Thank you very much. No.
Very good. Good conversation.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
Extremely important subject. In fact, I think this is one of the bigger hurdles that we've got out there to focus on right now. And I think we're making good progress and look forward to this person-to-person meeting.
Great. Well, I would certainly agree. And for that reason in particular, I'm grateful that you all are willing to give some extra time to these important topics, because I think that's really what it takes for our board to make the maximum progress possible here. So we'll look forward. We'll send out more information about the 20th, but we'll look forward to seeing you then.
Thank you all. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.